What if I told you that I have never met a doctor who didn't want the financial freedom to practice medicine on their terms? Keep listening to learn how. Welcome to the Money Meets Medicine podcast, where we talk all about the personal finance topics you wish you had learned in medical school. I'm your host, Dr. Jimmy Turner, and here's your co-host who is currently looking for new fiction series recommendations for audiobook consumption, Justin Harvey.
Dr. Turner, it's great to see you. I was just in your neck of the woods for a wedding in North Carolina, which was really fun. Apparently, it was the only like cold, rainy weekend you guys have had recently.
I know.
It did not rain on our parade. We had a great time. We were on the Southern Lake. There's the two.
Lake Norman?
It was south of Lake Norman, the other one.
I'm not great at geography,
anyway,
I'm not going to lie.
We had a great time. But so I got all this air flying back and forth with my family, and I like to put a little earbud in, and I'm listening, and I've also been working out. I like to do books at the gym, and my wife got me into Cormoran Strike is the protagonist. It's Robert Galbraith is the name of the author, which is actually a pseudonym for J.K. Rowling, which is kind of fun. Didn't know somebody of her status would do that kind of thing. And I like the sort of police procedurals, and I liked Michael Connelly, who did The Lincoln Lawyer and did the Bosch Detectives series. And I've been exploring other series in those genres and just haven't found something that clicks. And I would love to like find that first book of like, oh, there's nine of these. And this will be the next like 3 months of working out. I can listen to one of these. So that's what I'm looking for. But I'm curious, what are you reading right now?
Yeah,
or what do you think I should explore?
Oh, well, there's always one answer for me that I'll get to in a second. But the J.K. Rowling thing actually doesn't surprise me because like you remember that artist that turned in, I can't remember what it was. It was just something that was completely non-artistic, but turned it in as a piece of art at this like contemporary art museum. And they rejected it. And very famous artist. I'm trying to remember who it was, but they turned it back in with their name on it this time. And then, of course, they accepted it. And so, like, if I was J.K. Rowling, I'm not going to lie. If I had prolific success in these other books, like writing underneath an eponym, where if people like it, it's because it's a good book.
Right.
And not because your name's on it. Yeah, I can get behind that. I totally get that. But the answer for me is always my favorite author, which is Brandon Sanderson. So if you are a fantasy loving person. Now, I like other genres too. Like, I love Harlan Coben's books in terms of beach books and whodunits and that sort of thing. Like, I've got other authors that I really enjoy. But Brandon Sanderson, if you're looking for somewhere that's fantasy, science fiction kind of genre, the reason I love Brandon Sanderson, before I turn this into a completely book episode, because I read a lot, we're a big reading family. So, Brandon writes in fantasy, but his books are all so different. And so, he has a book series called Skyward, which is about this heroine. She's a pilot. Her dad was a pilot. He was a controversial figure in their society. And so it's about flying in this kind of space sort of atmosphere with humans and these Krell, these things that they're flying against, this other species. And so it's got that kind of feel to it, right? And then he's got another book that's called The Reckoners, which is about superheroes that are evil. And they all have a weakness. And there's this crew of people trying to figure out what their weakness is. They can get back human society. And so it's like a superhero set of novels. And he's got another one, Mistborn. You know, it's about people that swallow metals and it gives them powers and different abilities. So he's a fantasy author that writes in so many different genres, but all of those are trilogies at least. And then he's got his The Way of Kings series. It's 5 books long. That's like his epic fantasy, his big piece of work that he's most well known for. But man, like Skyward and Reckoners are such easy reads. They're just pleasurable, fun to listen to reads that have good storylines and totally got my 12-year-old hooked on fantasy novels to the extent where we just finished Way of Kings, which was a 50-hour listen on Audible. So we have lots of time in the car with baseball, any travel baseball
1.75
parents.
1.75 on that one.
Yeah, it's 1.35 for us, but we get it done. We're on book 2 now. But I totally turned him into like this fantasy book lover after doing Skyward, Reckoners, and Mistborn. And if you're looking for fantasy, Brandon Sanderson's always the answer.
I think I'm going to have to check that out because I haven't historically done fantasy. I'm not super opposed, but it just hasn't really ever captured my attention. But I feel like for a guy like Brandon Sanderson, I need to at least give it a try, especially after this recommendation. So I will investigate and report back.
Couldn't recommend it more highly. But Brandon Sanderson, believe it or not, is not sponsoring this episode.
It's
so yeah, that's right. Hey, Brandon, if you're interested, let me know. Just reach out. We can definitely make something work. That said,
can he afford you, Jimmy? I don't know.
Yeah, it might be tight. I don't know. We're running a good show at this point. But we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, financial independence work optional, FIWO, as I like to call it, on this show, and how I absolutely hate FIRE. I hate the concept of FIRE. And we'll talk about it why here in just a little bit. But before we do, something that does actually sponsor the show is Money Meets Medicine Disability Insurance. So if you do not have disability insurance and you're finishing training, moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability, get quotes. Even if you're going to fellowship, please check into your options. Honestly, even if you're not finishing training, like, you need disability insurance before you get pregnant, ideally. You need disability insurance before you get life insurance because it can make it harder to get disability insurance. It's also cheaper, and some of the programs are not promised to be there the next year. So getting disability insurance as soon as possible in training is actually the ideal thing, and there's ways to make it really affordable. We get our quotes less than $100 a month for a lot of our residents, depending on which program you're at and what your options are. So it is not like this unbelievably unaffordable thing, but it is really important, and you do have to get it before you finish training. It's super important. Catastrophic financial mistake if you don't. Moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. to get quotes on that. So Justin, we're going to talk about FIWO versus FIRE.
The dorky acronym, dude.
I like FIWO. You know what? It's mine. I'm going to keep it. You can say what you want. Let's just call it work optional. We can just call it WO. Episode title could just be WO. But FIRE gets lots of airtime. Financial independence, retire early. I mean, there's sites with that name on it for physicians. And I'm going to tell you what. It makes sense why it is so popular. Lots of doctors are burning out. Medicine is changing. We got insurance companies trying to tell us how to do our job, pre-authorizations, EMRs that are clearly made for billing and not for patient care, where you have to check boxes or it won't let you close a note, administrators that have placed expectations on you that are unreasonable, and all the different modules you have to do or certifications you have to check off to be a doctor, which is ridiculous. Like, there's so many forces working at play here. You don't control your schedule professionally or personally. Like, we talked about that in the last week episode. You can check out. I understand why financial independence, retire early is such a powerful idea for doctors, particularly if you're burned out and you're trying to find an escape hatch. I totally get it. I used to think the same way about it, but my story is one where I was burning out, and I shared last week that one of the things that saved my career was going part-time. But what I didn't tell you last week is that going part-time caused me massive existential angst and problems, because I experienced at the age of 35 what most people experience when they retire at 60, when I all of a sudden had a bunch of time on my hands and I realized, oh, there's this thing called purpose. And as human beings, we need that. We require it, it turns out, in order to be happy and to live fulfilling lives. And so when I went to 2 or 3 days a week in medicine because I just needed to get out of that thing, and I all of a sudden had all this time, and I woke up and there's no structure, there's no schedule, there's no docket or agenda on what must be done that day because no one's telling me what to do, I struggled badly, ended up on antidepressants. And so, like, yes, it saved my career. I got out of burnout and actually liked practicing medicine more, to the extent that I was so bored and couldn't figure out my life on the days that I was off. I was looking forward to going back to the hospital. That's part of the reason why it saved my career. And so I think that it is so common for people to get to FIRE, quit medicine, and find out they're miserable. And I know that if you're in the thick of it and you're burned out right now, that sounds impossible. But trust me when I say I've done it myself, and I've seen so many other doctors get there because they weren't sure what they wanted life to look like on the other side. And they hadn't really developed that purpose or that sense of community outside the hospital, or who you're going to be if you're not a doctor anymore. Because it turns out that identity is a big thing for everybody, but in particular for doctors. And so I think, and I'll see what your thoughts are on my argument here. I think a healthier approach is to get to this financially independent work optional phase where you have enough money that you can stick up a giant middle finger to the administrator when they tell you that they want you to do something, but you don't think it's best for your patients, that you can say no. Hey, we need you to be on this committee. No, I'm not doing that. What do you mean you're not doing that? No is a pretty straightforward sentence, right? I'm not doing it. Like, you just have the ability to stand up for the kind of medicine that you want to practice. Like, you can practice on your terms as much or as little as you want. And in my experience, when doctors have that freedom, it's interesting because it goes one of two ways. One way is they find out that they love practicing medicine again, actually, and they are better doctors for it. Some people, because they don't have that financial independence, there's like this giant magnifying glass on the things that really bother them, and they start to bother them more. And for that person, like, FIRE is the answer. Like, you're going to be getting out of medicine. I've seen it happen more than once. My buddy Leaf, who started Physician on FIRE, was that variety of person. So that said, I know a lot of people where FIRE wasn't the answer. It was actually getting to financial independence, work optional, so that they could practice on their terms. That's my experience, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything you just said. And I think I observe this in other professions and things too. And even in the financial advisory realm, I think this is probably just, it transcends the kind of work that you do to, you can just show up and be present if you're less economically constrained and you just do what invigorates you, what gives you energy in life and the way that you feel like you give back to the world through vocation in sort of the capital V sense of vocation. And I feel the same way about being an advisor that you do, probably about being a doctor. And it's something that I'm good at. It's something that is very fulfilling. I help people, their lives are better because of my work. And if I was financially independent tomorrow, I would keep on doing it. And being totally economically removed from the need to earn money does change the way that you interact with what you do. And for myself, I'm trying to like build that in as soon as possible. So I'm kind of trending towards acting like I'm financially independent in how I'm living my life. But yes, and even as a patient, like I can tell you when I interact with doctors and they're harried and stressed, I actually know better than most people, like the things that they're dealing with, they're getting shot at from 10 different directions. And when they're with me in the room, they're thinking about all the stakeholders they have to keep happy in order to do their jobs. And so I'm very sympathetic to that. But if I can show up and I got a doctor who's like, you know what? Before I came in here, they asked me to be on a committee and I flipped them the bird. And then I came into the room skipping like a second grader because I'm so happy with how my life is. Like, that's the doctor that I want if I could have my choice.
Before we get back to it, let's talk taxes. As many of you know, I recently took a 1099 private practice gig as an anesthesiologist after being a W-2 doc for 15 years. And honestly, after combining this with the business income from Money Meets Medicine, the tax piece almost broke me. Should I be an S-Corp? What about QBI deductions or the pass-through entity tax breaks I should be taking advantage of? Nobody really teaches this stuff in residency. You just kind of figure it out after you've already screwed it up. That's why I started working with Gelt for proactive tax planning for my own taxes. Gelt is a modern CPA firm that specializes in helping high-earning physicians. So whether you're a locums doc, a practice owner, a partner getting a K-1, or a W-2 physician with 1099 income on the side, Gelt handles the stuff that actually moves the needle. S-Corp elections, PTET credits, QBI, retirement optimization, really everything in between. The biggest reason I started working with Gelt myself is that unlike most CPA firms, they provide a proactive strategy all year long, not just an intake form and running the numbers in February or March each year. So if your CPA only reached out in February or March and left you wondering if you paid more on taxes than you should, it doesn't have to be that way. A great CPA is a year-round partner who knows your business and reaches out proactively. And Q2 is the best time to make a switch because Gelt specializes in exactly this kind of transition for those of you who are ready for a better experience. Speaking of which, when new clients get started this quarter, Gelt goes back through your last 3 years of returns and identifies deductions that were missed, and in some cases, is able to recover them. This is included as a complimentary service for new clients. So if your tax situation has outgrown TurboTax or your current CPA only calls you in March each year, head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA for a free consult with Gelt. And because you're a part of the Money Meets Medicine community, when you use that link, you'll also get a 10% discount off services with Gelt that first year as well. So head on over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA and check out Gelt. Studies are extremely clear, in my opinion, on the opposite side of this, right? Where we know that financial stress and student loan burdens have impacts. They've been linked to lower in-training exam scores, so lower academic performance for our residents. They've been linked to people choosing higher paying specialties. It's been linked to people specifically avoiding underserved communities because they're lower paying jobs a lot of the times. It's been linked to delaying buying a house or starting a family or having kids. And so it is unequivocally clear at this point to me that financial stress has an impact on your personal, professional, and even your academic abilities as a physician. And the American Psychological Association does studies all the time that basically show that money is the biggest stressor in American households. That's not different for residents, right, who are working 60 or 80 hours a week. And so if that is profoundly impacting people's wellness on one side, it could be argued then on the other that financial freedom would be the answer to many of those things. A challenge that people have to find the balance, though, in the journey that you take when you start having some financial freedom. So when you get there, the reason I tell you about this, I'm warning you so that you can prepare better than I did when I all of a sudden had 2 or 3 days off and didn't know what to do with myself and it was miserable, is to like figure out who you are outside the hospital. Like maybe you get back some of those hobbies you had in college, right? Or maybe you decide that you're going to be a little more involved in your community at a church or in a local organization that you care about. And for me, it turns out, I have a lot of clarity on what makes me feel like I'm living a fulfilling, happy life professionally at this stage of my game, which is I love teaching people. I love education. I love content creation. It turns out I am perfectly happy sitting on my couch, creating a ton of content for people where I'm going to be helping them improve their career, improve their finances, find some fulfillment, and not interact with a human all day. Like, I'm perfectly fine doing that for 7 hours of my day till my family comes home. And I'm equally happy going to the hospital and taking care of patients and just focusing on that and doing a really good job doing anesthesia and taking people through some tough times that they're going through personally when they have to have surgery on stuff. And that said, like, it's just the process needs to happen. Financial independence is not the answer, I guess is what I'm getting at. It is a tool in the toolbox. It is a means to an end, but it's not the end itself. And I think that when you realize that, you're not setting yourself up for like the most giant arrival fallacy of all time. We talk about the arrival fallacy a lot on the show. So I think it's just so true for doctors where you finish training, right? You finish med school, residency is going to be better. That's when I'm going to be happy. You're in residency and you're burning out. You're like, well, when I make, you know, the attending job and make attending money and buy the doctor house, like that's when I'm going to be happy. And then like you get there and now you're 2 or 3 years into your attending career and it turns out you're not, right? That's because you arrived and it turns out it was an arrival fallacy. You weren't as happy as you thought you'd be. The penultimate arrival fallacy in my experience is people who make financial independence this paramount peak of a mountain that's higher than any other. And then they get there and they find out they're not happy, which is a very depressing place to be when you've worked so hard to get to that number and to get to that goal. There's work to be done on the way to giving you options and to figuring out what is your purpose? What is your community going to look like? What is your identity going to look like when you're not practicing medicine every single day? That's not something you figure out overnight.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was funny. I've been in finance long enough to have observed the arc. Like I was reading Mr. Money Mustache 12 years ago.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And there was this moment when it was the beginning of a movement and we didn't know how it was going to age exactly. And so there was these sort of like pre-arrival manifestation. And then we saw how that aged. And we saw a lot of arrival fallacy and people like having public identity crises. Which, you know, it's not their fault. I don't mean to demean them anyway. It's just like, oh, they kind of didn't expect that this was going to happen, but we all watched it happen because they're like posting their net worth growth in real time and they got this following and everyone's like cheering them on to, you know, get to that 4% drawdown guardrail, whatever. And it turns out that, wow, you still got to live a life after you hit a net worth of a certain threshold. And in itself is a poor foundation for meaning. It's got to be derived from something else.
Oh, completely. Which is why I think that the idea of fast fire in and of itself is not great, right? So having coached hundreds of doctors back when I was running a coaching program, the most common mistake that doctors make when they're burning out and they're not satisfied in their career is making a pivot or a change of some kind without ever actually figuring out, why am I so dissatisfied with my career? Like, what is the diagnosis? Like, you would never just start treating somebody with a random medication without figuring out what the actual problem is first, right? You want to make a good, solid diagnosis before you start treating people, if and when that is at all possible. And it's the same thing here. When you're not happy in your career, in your marriage, in your financial situation, you need to do some tough problem-solving, question-involving situations with an advisor, a counselor, a friend, somebody who can tell you what it's about honestly. So usually your friend actually is not a good choice, believe it or not. So in the coaching community, this is called throwing yourself in the pool, like when you commiserate with somebody when they're struggling. Great for a friend. That's what friends are supposed to do. But if you're looking for advice or counselor or coach, it's actually terrible because that person is not supposed to make you feel like, oh yeah, that is a really terrible situation. Like that's not helpful. What's helpful is being like, well, what's so bad about it? And you're like, my boss said this and they did that. And like, okay. So like, what does that mean? What's so bad about that? And like just pointing out to them, like these are just things that happen externally to you in life. What you're making it mean and what you're doing about it are entirely up to you, it turns out. And so it's a fascinating process that you have to go through. And it turns out friends are terrible at doing that. Most friends, I will say, personal plug and prideful comment of the podcast, I'm actually one of the few people I know, like my friends all know. They're like, if you want an honest opinion, ask Jimmy. If you don't want an honest opinion, don't ask Jimmy. Jimmy's going to tell you exactly what he thinks. I'm not going to do it unsolicited, but like, if you ask my opinion on something, I'll give you a shot across the bow to be like, do you really want to know what I think before I tell you like, yeah, you're really terrible at that. And I'll say it in the most loving, kind way I possibly can say it. But like, I don't think it's helpful to, my wife has taught me that clear is kind is what I'm trying to say. Clear is kind.
That's such a badge of honor, dude. Yeah. I can count on one hand, a couple of fingers, the people I think I would describe in my life that way. And you're one of them. And I think about my buddy, Dan, that I lived with in Philadelphia for a long time, is like, buckle up. He will tell you what he thinks. He's smart. He loves you and he will be honest. And that is love. You know, that's like, you want your friends to love you and empathy and creating that human connection is part of that, but being honest is a necessary counterpart, and that's a tough thing to do well. So I have a lot of respect for you in that regard.
Honestly, like, it's just kind of the way I've always been wired, so there's nothing I can claim is like, wow, this is all the work that I did to become like that. It just became really obvious to me at a super young age that I didn't like dishonesty, and you telling someone what they want to hear, even though it's not true, is dishonest, at least the way my brain has always processed that. And so I'm not a jerk. I will never go out of my way to tell somebody my opinion on something if they don't ask or want to know. But the reason I mention this is because so many doctors, myself included, I'm throwing myself in there, get burned out in medicine, and then they start throwing treatments at things. They're like, okay, I hate my job. The answer is financial independence. It's like, hold on. You wouldn't start treating something without figuring out what the diagnosis is. So let's not change jobs, sell the house, ruin your marriage because now your spouse is unhappy because you think the change in jobs is going to fix this. Because I can tell you from experience coaching lots of people, I cannot tell you the number of people I have met that didn't do the work, didn't figure out why they were burned out, didn't figure out why they were dissatisfied, changed jobs, and found out it was just as bad or worse at the new position that was supposed to be this panacea that solved all their problems. Financial independence, my friend, unfortunately, is the same thing for a lot of people. I know that sounds crazy, but if you don't... So this is why financial independence work optional is great, because it gives
you... You can just say it if you want to. I'm not going to make fun of you anymore.
FIWO. It's FIWO. Everyone listening, it's FIWO. But it's why it's great. And the reason why is because it gives you the ability to cut back and maybe take a day a week, maybe take 2 days a week. And on those days a week, you figure out what life's going to look like after medicine instead of going cold turkey when you're 60 or 65 and try to retire and have no idea who you are, or 45 if we're talking about FIRE, which is just as big of an existential problem, I can assure you. So having the ability to practice medicine as much or as little as you want, to practice medicine on your terms, to say no to administrators, to say no to asks, that is really powerful. And it gives you time, you're buying back time to allow you to figure out those tougher questions in life. And that for me was like the second stage of Jimmy Turner's journey of like, oh, this is actually the answer. I thought it was FIRE. And then I had all the time and I realized it wasn't. And now that I have options, I took a lower paying job a few months ago, significantly lower paying, but I get done at 3 o'clock every day and I never miss a baseball practice ever. No nights, no weekends, no holidays. And to some of you, you're like, that sounds terrible. I like working real. I actually don't know anybody that says that. Some people say that. But like for me, controlling my schedule, talked about it last week, was one of the most important things to me, that after doing the hard work and asking the tough questions and getting my own coaching and having friends that would actually tell me how it was. And Jimmy, you're just a big whiner sometimes, right? It turns out that having control of my schedule is one of the biggest determinants of whether I am happy in life. And I could not do that in a lot of jobs. Like if you're out there and you're looking for a private practice partner, Jimmy Turner will never be your guy. I'm not going to be taking Q4 call. It's just not going to happen. I would be miserable and you would hate me. Not because I'm not good at the job, to be clear, but because I'd be miserable. So as we wind down, I just think that maybe you should move the cheese a little bit, move the goalpost to a better place. That's usually a negative connotation, but I think you should change your goal to getting to financial independence work optional, FIWO, as Justin hates to hear it called, instead of FIRE as this escape hatch, as a solution to your career woes, your dissatisfaction, your burnout. Practice medicine on your terms, as much or as little as you want. And you might find out, as crazy as it sounds, you end up falling back in love with medicine because you now have the option. I've seen that happen over and over again. So money is a tool. It is a means to in the end, not an end itself. Don't forget that. All right, everybody, as you head out, don't forget, end of the academic year, disability insurance. You need to get that done before you finish. Moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. And technically, yes, this is coming out on July 1st. So if you tagged along for this long part of the episode, your training window is open for 30 to 60 days after you finish training. So if you're hearing this and you're like, oh my gosh, I missed getting disability insurance, you technically have like a month. Moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability to get your quotes, see your options, and to work with a company that you know you can trust. Cheers.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he helps anesthesiologists and pain medicine physicians. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing academic anesthesiologist at Wake Forest in North Carolina. He's also a licensed insurance agent. However, either Justin or Jimmy are your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only. Nothing should be considered financial advice. All views expressed are solely the views of the guests on the show and do not represent the views or opinions of their employer.